Just last week, I was musing on the fate of the D notices. I was explaining them to you beloved listeners. It was the system where the media agreed, signed up, in fact, not to publish information that the government considered was a threat to national security. And I was actually witness to a few very dramatic scenes where editors were tempted to break D notices and got short shrift from their employers. Now I learn that the last meeting of a D notice committee was in 1982, but that Paul Keating's government did try to revive it in 1995. Now, why the history lesson? Well, no more D notice meetings, no more quiet chats with the editor. Instead, police raids on News Corp and my place of employment. Well, both of them, I come to think of it, are places of my employment. National security, the public interest and press freedom are back centre stage. Why? We're joined by Hamish McDonald, a former foreign editor of the Sydney Morning Herald, who probably remembers the D notice days. And he's on the mobile from Port Moresby. Hamish, welcome back. And in our Brisbane studio, Dr. Rebecca Ananian-Welsh from the Law School at the University of Queensland. Rebecca is the author of that quote that I read to you, an expert on our numerous laws dealing with national security and our right not to know anything about it. I welcome you two to the program. Hamish, a week since the raids, do you think it was the intelligence and security communities that went burgo last week, or was it the government?
I think it was a signal from the government, probably through the Home Affairs Ministry to the Federal Police. I think the burgo element is probably a bit far up the chain of command. The Federal Police deny that they got any specific instructions, but on their record, they're pretty good at picking up what the government wants them to do by some kind of osmosis.
Are you soothed by the Prime Minister's reassurance that everyone is subject to the law, said there's nothing to worry about?
Not at all. I'm worried. I mean, people like me who cover intelligence matters, constantly thinking that, you know, by inadvertently naming somebody or exposing an operation, that we would be liable for a couple of years jail under these recent changes to the criminal code.
And you've also made the point the AFP is acutely sensitive to which cases it raises, because it does seem to, to take the cue from its political masters.
Indeed, it went rather soft on the Iraqi loans, wheat payments scandal. And you might recall that the names of two Indonesian soldiers were referred for prosecution over the Balibo killings, and the police quietly sat on that and then declared the day that Gough Whitlam died that it was too difficult to mount a prosecution.
Hamish, which raid do you think was the more significant? The one on the News Corp, on News Corp journalist Annikas Smethurst, or the ABC one?
I think they're both significant, particularly as they came one after the other. I think probably the ABC one is the most worrying because the warrant was so broad. It was a fishing expedition that would have allowed the Federal Police to look through a whole array of ABC files. And the warrant was actually granted, I believe, by quite a junior magistrate in the Queanbeyan Court of Petty Sessions. Not a high-level judge equipped to evaluate whether a warrant was actually deserved to be approved.
Before I bring Rebecca into the conversation, do you think News Corp might have been miffed, shocked that they were targeted? Because, as you've written, they've been the preferred conduit for politically advantageous security and defence leaks.
Yes, they have for years. You know, if you some good stories and some that are very really politically slanted, particularly those that show the opposition up in a weak light, or expose risks of terrorism coming from refugees, that kind of thing. News Corp probably thought this kind of thing would not happen to them.
Rebecca, Dennis Richardson, the former head of defence at ASIO, told Laura Tingle on 7:30 that the raids were carried out under the Crimes Act. Is that your view?
So the raids kind of are the perfect storm of three whole different areas of law, or even more areas of law coming together. So, yeah, the raids were undertaken under the Crimes Act. That's what the warrant was issued under. But it was most likely to investigate offences or potential offences under other legislation. So, for example, there were a whole raft of new secrecy and espionage offences introduced last year, which amended the criminal code and introduced things here, there and everywhere. And some of the data surveillance powers that we saw used against the ABC, but also probably that we haven't seen used, the covert kind of data surveillance that we can only assume went on behind the scenes. Again, that was introduced in 2015 and then overhauled last year. So as you so aptly quoted me saying, we have more counterterrorism law than anywhere else in the world, it can be hard to keep up.
I must say, when I read that, and this is an article for Conversation, I was shocked. I'm pretty unshockable these days, but that astonished me. And when you add to it that we're the only liberal democracy lacking any sort of charter of human rights, it makes one doubly anxious.
It does, and I'm sorry, but I can't reassure you. It should, and I think that was the message I got this week, that we really should be anxious. We've been reassured and assured by government again and again that these powers are extreme but necessary to fight the extreme threat posed by global terrorism. And the AFP raids this week had nothing to do with global terrorism. They were about government misconduct.
Hamish, in your long experience as a journalist, have you ever felt threatened in this way?
I have been warned by a letter from the Attorney General's Department some years ago when I named somebody as a former ASIS officer. The gentleman in concern was appointed acting director of ASIS, and the departmental press release said that he had been promoted from within the DFAT portfolio, which more or less gave the game away. Anyway, I was sent a threatening letter about that. You wonder, people are very much more careful with their electronic communications. It may well go, and you know, people can't really slip out to a public phone box anymore to ring you up because A, there aren't any public phones, and B, the spooks have got voice recognition anyway. So it's getting rather difficult.
Rebecca, I was quite shocked by Hamish's anecdote before that the raid was approved by a court registrar, a magistrate in Queanbeyan. I mean, so surely it should be higher up the food chain.
I think the shock comes from how shocking this is for us, because this doesn't happen very often. But it just reflects how normalised these kinds of powers have become. So far as the AFP goes, this was an investigation into some serious offences, and they need a warrant to search a premises to investigate offences, national security offences at that. They can get that warrant from their usual ways of getting warrants. It's very rare that there will be a process written into a warrant procedure that will require them to go to, say, the Attorney General or a particular kind of judge. So I think this is just the normalisation, if I can use a word with so many syllables, of national security laws at the moment and of these kinds of things. What's troubling is that there was, if the government's to be believed, that they had no knowledge of it, that the AFP felt they could just go in and grab that warrant from a magistrate in Queen Beanne and raid the ABC without running it by anybody. And so that internal political, more politicised process has really fallen down there. Legally, this is a tick, but it says to us that there should be stronger oversight measures and it maybe should be a little harder to get these kinds of warrants.
Hamish, our next story tonight concerns the rise of fundamentalism, Christian fundamentalism, in the United States and how the phenomenon of the Pentecostal movement came into being. And as I've already said, of course, that raises the issue of our own Prime Minister's beliefs. I mention him in this context because he looks into the camera and with radiant innocence says it was nothing to do with us. Are you faintly suspicious?
I am suspicious because I think signals are given and leeway created and blank checks are written for certain people. Peter Dutton, for example, and his secretary, Mike Pezzullo, who are set on expanding their powers and grabbing powers from other agencies, including the Defence Department.
Rebecca, the recent crackdown confirms for you what lawyers and journalists feared about this agglomeration of recent legislation, the demise of source confidentiality.
I'm afraid so. Sorry, Philip, I've got a crickle in my throat. it's all just so emotional. But source confidentiality in the age of the internet is a really difficult thing to maintain. And so we've had in Australia since 2015 warrantless access by at least 22 government agencies to metadata. So that's data about, about our communications, time, location, who it's to, who it's from. Sorry.
Look, I'll go back to Hamish while you have a glass
have a
of water. Hamish, I was talking about the D notices earlier and the way media organisations signed up to agree that this or that was not in the national interest. I had particular personal knowledge of a row that broke out between Packer, Trevor Kennedy and the D notice people over, of all things, the Petrovs. Now, the Petrovs, their identity, their location was deemed to be a very dangerous secret. Do you agree that there are secrets that we shouldn't know about?
I tend to agree there are some things we should not reveal. I mean, I know a lot of people in the intelligence services and giving their names and affiliations would put them at risk and certainly make their careers a lot harder. There are other things where I think we are far too protective. I think the Americans are much more open. And that's been going back 40, 50 years. You know, in the old days, if you wanted to know what was happening at Pine Gap, you'd look at Aerospace Weekly, an American publication, because stuff would be coming out there that the Defense Department here would virtually kill you to stop you knowing. And that's continued. We are highly protective of things. And, as you were saying, these things, the two raids last week were not about threats to national security. These were just about embarrassments to the government.
But as Assange and others demonstrate, and this is a point that Rebecca's making, it's bloody hard to keep secrets these days.
It certainly is. The government, on their side, they're terrified that because they're having to hire all these bright young whiz kids in mathematics and IT and languages and so on, that one of them is going to turn out to be another Snowden or Chelsea Manning and get an attack of conscience. And, you know, it's not just a question of photocopying documents laboriously like Daniel Ellsberg did with the Pentagon Papers. You can just download them onto a flash drive and, you know, in seconds, masses of documents, and get them out. So it's a nightmare on their side as well, but it's a nightmare for us too.
You're listening, of course, to Len and Elle, and we use facial recognition technology, and according to that, my guests are Hamish McDonald and Rebecca Ananian-Welsh. Feeling a bit better, Rebecca?
Yeah, thank you.
Would you like to return to the fray and pick up where you left off?
Let's do it. So we were talking about secrecy in an age of data. Look, and I think what Hamish was saying is right. There has to be secrecy, otherwise our intelligence service can't function. But there also has to be whistleblowing and government accountability. And these are really hard things to balance. And everyone's, I think, hit on something in realising just how low level the judge was who issued this warrant, that it's a difficult balance and you need people involved who can strike that balance properly. How they do that and who needs to be involved are issues that have been skirted over, I think, in the last 20 years since September 11. And we need to get give them more attention and have better drafted laws that can strike that balance.
Hamish, the struggle for influence in Canberra isn't only about ASD and the Australian Signals Directorate, but the Office of National Assessments.
Yes. The ONA has recently been expanded and upgraded to the Office of National Intelligence with a Director of General of National Intelligence sitting on top of it with a direct line to the Prime Minister. Well, the ONA came under the Prime Minister before, but it was a rather small and very expert think tank which was encouraged to not just repeat orthodoxies but to look outside the square and look for what might be called black swan events and grey rhinos and all that stuff. A new office has now been charged with, as well as analysis, with coordinating all the other six or seven intelligence agencies and their products and producing a daily brief to the Prime Minister and Cabinet. Now, I've heard from very senior people who were with ONA that they fear this will erode the quality of analysis and B, the independence that they've had, that many directors have fought for and indeed reached a crisis point during the second Iraq war in 2002-2003. So there is a worry that, you know, the intelligence is sort of getting to the equivalent of the 24/7 news cycle and putting out, you know, flash information without having the capacity to really sit and analyze it and measure it against non-clandestine sources of information.
We need a lot more time, but we don't have it. But I'm going to put this to you, Rebecca. In the news, we heard that there'd been a meeting this very day between Ita Buttrose and our shiny bright new chief exec with the Prime Minister, and that Ita was expressing hope that it was, that there might be some sort of a deal doable. Had you been at that meeting, what would you have advised?
I think I get very concerned. So my concern is the laws and the powers that are there. And it may be that we can trust this government. It may be that we can't. But even if deals are made for now, then what about for 5 years from now? What about next time the AFP decides to raid? How long will that deal actually last? So I think having these broad powers there that impact journalists and impact the rest of us as well, is just not good enough to be reassured. Oh, whoops, we stuffed up that one time. Sorry about that. No one came out of that looking very good. We'll try not to do that again. The rule of law is there, and if people are breaking the law, then perhaps they should be prosecuted. And if we don't agree that they've done anything wrong, then that law shouldn't be criminalising that conduct. So the laws need to change here. But changing national security law is a really uncomfortable thing for governments to do.
And for oppositions to oppose.
Very much so.
Well, thanks to the two of you, Hamish McDonald, a former foreign editor and China correspondent of the Sydney Morning Herald, and thank you, Dr. Rebecca Ananian-Welsh, senior lecturer at the School of Law at the University of Queensland. This is LNL.